Lake City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 66 of our quest to 100 podcast episodes of the USA Volleyball Show this year. My name is Clarence Hughes, reporting to you live from Dallas, Texas. Hey, what's up, Stephen? Welcome back.
To order 66. I had to.
Wow, I love that. That was a date. I laughed way too hard at that, but I love that.
As I was going through the run of show and writing down episode 66, that's all I could think of.
I just love how I did that very extra intro. And you were just like, execute, Lord.
Trying to do my best Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, man. 10 out of 10.
Star Wars is great.
This is the way.
This is the way. How are you doing? You in Dallas yet?
I'm in Dallas right now. Oh, yes. Currently staying at the Omni Hotel.
Great hotel. Have you checked out the rooftop pool yet?
Yeah, I'm out.
It's technically like the second or third floor, I think, but it's like on the rooftop of the hotel. You go check it out.
You know, the Hyatt in Salt Lake City, for those of you who attend Salt Lake City Showdown and work, they also have a rooftop pool.
Ooh, nice. I still got to make it out to Salt Lake City.
You do. You're missing out.
Maybe next year.
But enough about Salt Lake. Let's talk about Dallas, your hometown.
That's right. I'm not going to be there, but you're going to have a great time. How's setup going? You getting ready for the week? A lot of festivities going on there between Opens and the Hall of Fame. But yeah, how's it going?
So far, so good. We were just kind of wrapping up, actually starting the first day of our meetings, too. So it's been a lot of talking, a lot of introductions.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
A lot of stuff on the business side. And then technically, we start open setup tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., bright and early. So hopefully everything goes smooth. But that's basically been the case so far.
Awesome. Yeah. Anything like exciting happening so far in the preparations? Have you gotten to go to any good restaurants or anything before?
Actually, just had some really good Al Pastor tacos yesterday.
And there you go.
Right before we went to the Region Social event, we had some good tacos there. You know, love Colorado, but there's nothing like a good Al Pastor taco in Dallas.
That's
a lot more authentic. You know,
yeah, when in Texas, you got to get your tacos and you got to get your barbecue. So,
barbecue up next. We were we went to this place called Salsa Limon. I don't know if you've been there.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So good. Not quite in Deep Ellum, but right in that.
That's
area.
Pretty close. Yeah.
Super close
to the convention center. Yeah.
So good. Definitely recommend. 10 out of 10.
Nice. Deep Ellum, also a very cool area as well. But yeah, awesome. Glad things are going well in Dallas, and good luck with setting up and gearing up for the event. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you. We're going to miss you, but I see you're back, and you know, according
That's right.
to your Instagram story, you've been doing a little bit of traveling and relaxing. You want
according
to tell us
about that? To my IG,
yeah. The IG story.
yeah. My wife and I, we actually were just in Dallas. We saw family, and both my brothers were graduating college, and my family and friends threw us a little baby shower as well. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So I had a great time visiting Dallas and then seeing family and friends. And then we hopped on a plane and went to Destin for a few days to end our vacation and celebrate, you know, our baby moon / anniversary trip. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. Destin, my first time in Destin, 10 out of 10. Highly recommend it. It was incredible.
I'm loving these 10 out of 10s. Heck yeah. Real quick. Yeah. Do you guys have like a registry or things you know, kind of.
There is a registry floating around. I'm not sure if it's final yet, but once that is, we'll send it over.
Send the link.
We're pretty low key, though. We're like,
I know, that's all I wanted to ask.
We hate asking for stuff.
That's the point, man. Got to be here for each other.
Yeah,
but As soon as you guys get that link, we'll go ahead and post it on all social media platforms and go. Get it yeah. going.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah. We'll have it in the show notes for the podcast.
Oh, perfect. No, but for real, send it over to me too. I want to get you guys something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're excited. It's coming up quick. It's wild.
How you feeling?
Yeah.
Is it hitting you yet?
Yeah, it's definitely hit. We're feeling great. I'm feeling great. She's feeling great.
Look how ecstatic you look, man. I've never seen you smiling before.
Smiling ear to ear here. Yeah, no, very, very excited. Very excited. And it was good to celebrate with our family, or with my side of the family and friends in Dallas, too.
Timing's kind of crazy as well, too, because, you know, Kelsey Dolphin, our event manager, also just had a daughter. Which is crazy.
Congratulations to Kelsey and her husband, Reggie, for welcoming Kiara, I believe is her name. That's so exciting. And right before event season. So she got
out. Yeah. Lucky.
But that's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations to them. And yeah, a lot of babies. Little preview, little hints. We'll have some more baby news and the news with Hughes coming up. But yeah. Super exciting. I did want to share one incredible moment that happened in Destin. I rented a paddleboard on the beach, and we had done like three trips out and that day, and then I was like, okay, I gotta do one more ride, and then got out there, and towards the I was getting ready to come in, and I was turning around the paddleboard, and then all of a sudden see dolphins coming out of the water.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I was
booby seat.
And it was pretty far out, but I booked it out there and was paddling out and was able to catch them and was just kind of riding with them for a little bit.
Wow.
Righteous.
That's actually super cool. Wow.
Yeah, that was awesome. It was, yeah, kind of a once in a lifetime thing. I'd seen like another paddleboarder earlier that day get a similar experience, and there were like dolphins by him too.
Maybe they're just planning it, like the dolphins. They're like, all right,
maybe, yeah,
yep, let's do it again.
He's maybe, yep. Yeah, here's another show coming. Yeah. No, but that was awesome. But yeah, the Destin, definitely highly recommend it. The water is like super clear, sugar white sand, incredible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm gonna be due for a vacation right after event season. Then
soon. Go, so book it.
I don't know where I'm going and how long I'm going for, but we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, man. Yeah. Let's just, I guess, get to the episode here.
Have we
caught up on everything? Have we caught up on everything?
Yeah, we got to record an episode too, or we're recording one. Actually, we're just over here talking.
That's right. But we have back to back episodes. A rare back-to-back episodes for us. Love doing those, but we're kind of celebrating Hall of Fame week with back-to-back episodes. And because of that, we're going to have just want to let all the listeners know our next episode will be Wednesday, June 14th. So you can expect that next episode to drop then. But let's get to it. It's Hall of Fame week. If you haven't listened yet, we featured another Hall of Famer in our previous episode. Olympic gold medalist Ryan Millar came on the show to share his reaction to being awarded the all-time great male indoor athlete award ahead of this week's Hall of Fame ceremony in Dallas, Texas. He also shares his favorite memories and career moments, including competing at three Olympic Games and, of course, winning gold at the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing. You can listen to that now on all podcast platforms or watch on usavolleyball.org or the USA Volleyball YouTube channel. And now, the moment has arrived. News with Hughes.
All right. Big news. And we're talking big news. Steven almost gave it away, but I love a little segue he did. But everybody, former guest and Olympic gold medalist April Ross announced that she and her fiance, Josh, are expecting, yes, a baby. Due in October, the A-team is getting a little bit bigger because Alex Kleinman is also expecting very soon as well. So very excited for them both, April and Alex, and congratulations to their families. Wow, just what a year.
Another one.
Oh, man, that was great. You're on a roll today, man. But Volleyball Nations League is coming to the United States. Watch the world's best volleyball athletes in person on home soil, beginning with the men's 3-week leg that's going to be hosted in Anaheim, California from July 4th through the 9th, and then watch the women's finals in Arlington, Texas from July 12th through the 16th. Buy your VNL tickets for Anaheim and Arlington right now. And speaking of VNL, the 30-player long list of rosters for the United States women's and men for Volleyball Nations League were announced last week. 8 Olympians highlight the women's roster, including Jordan Larson, making her return to the national team. 10 Olympians will return on the men's roster, including Matt Anderson and David Smith. That just made me so excited to hear that. But whew, man. I can't wait. VNL is going to be a fun one this year for sure.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And just to put our listeners at ease, because I know they're probably freaking out now, but Jordan Thompson is also on the roster too.
That is correct. JT? All right, sorry. Oh, man. I hope she doesn't listen to this because I said that. But anyways, the United States men's sitting team took silver at the Paravolley Pan American Zonal Championship after falling to Brazil in the final and missing their chance to qualify for the Paris 2024 Paralympic Games. Former podcast guest Zach Up was named best server and Nicholas Dadgostar was named best libero. The team's next chance to qualify for the Paralympics will be November 11th through the 18th at the World Paravolley Sitting Volleyball World Cup. I almost got tongue-tied there. A lot of paravolley, a lot of volleyball happening. Wow, I can't even say Volleypalooza right now.
Volleypalooza.
Also, big congratulations to the girls U19 national team for going undefeated and capturing its second consecutive Pan American Cup. Pan American Cup gold medal. Excuse me. I'm just getting all sun-tied today. I don't know what's happening with me.
It's these long event title names. It's not you. It's
them. I'm not even blaming them. I'm going to blame these annual meetings. They're so long. I'm so disoriented.
You've had some long days. Long days.
But again, congratulations to the girls U19 on securing that gold medal. The 2023 USA Volleyball Women's Beach Collegiate Challenge will be held on September 29th through October 1st in Virginia Beach. Registration is now open for the event. And for more information on all of the latest news, you can visit usavolleyball.org.
All right. Thank you for that, Clarence. Mm-hmm. On to today's show, we've got another Hall of Famer for you. We're excited to have three-time Olympian Scott Fortune on today's show. Scott is being honored with the Harold T. Friermuth Lifetime Achievement Award at this week's USA Volleyball Hall of Fame ceremony. The award is USAB's highest honor. Scott shares his reaction to earning that honor, that award, and being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He shares great stories from his career and competing with the U.S. men's national team. He talks about what he's doing now on the USA Volleyball board and much, much more. But enough from us. Here's Scott. Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us on the podcast. I've never met you before, virtually or in person. So great to meet you. And I'm excited to hear your stories from your experience at the Olympics and with the national team. So thank you again for taking the time to sit down with us.
Yeah, my appreciation. No problem. I'm honored to talk to you and share the stories of volleyball that I have.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, at the start here, before we kind of dive into your career, but would like to take the moment to congratulate you on getting awarded the Harold T. Friermuth Award, aka the Friar Award, for the USA Volleyball Hall of Fame and getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, which that celebration when this episode comes out will actually be today. So so congratulations on that award. And yeah, just what are your kind of initial thoughts, emotions, getting a word with that that honor.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's a huge honor. I was very proud when I heard the news. I've been involved with USA Volleyball after I stopped playing in 97. And like, we'll get into the story how I got recruited. But I've seen USA Volleyball and worked with all the past prior winners. And you know, I don't know if it means I'm old now to get the award, but no, it's just an honor to be amongst all the past Friar winner award winners who I know, and to really to be, you know, to be recognized for giving back what I've given back. You know, I've always thought it's important. There are a lot of people that helped me the way through my journey to get to where I am, and it's always important for my mom or my family. We grew up to give back, right, to those who can have an opportunity to pursue, you know, the dreams I was able to pursue. And that was my choice to, with USA Volleyball, to help give back, and just honored and proud to be recognized for that with all the past recipients from that, from the great award.
Well, thank you for, you know, we always love to see the great alumni like yourself give back to the sport, and it, you know, just helps continue the growth of the sport and give opportunities for the future generations too. So on behalf of everyone in the volleyball community, thank you so much for all you do for volleyball.
Yeah, it's a pretty funny story real quickly how I received the award is via Zoom, right, nowadays. And I ran into Marv Dunphy. We were at the Stanford USD regional finals match for the NCAAs. And you know, my undergraduate, I went to Stanford, and I did graduate school at USD. So I followed both those teams, the women's team. And Marv ran into me. So, Scott, I got to talk to you. We're putting together an 88 alumni reunion for the 88 Olympic team. And I go, great. You know, I'll be in Monterey, but I can do the Zoom call. And so he called me up, and then there's Marv and Karch, who I played with. So, okay, he's the 88. And then all of a sudden, there's Al Monaco, Kevin Tuig, Kevin Wendelboe, Stu McDowell. I'm like, okay, Kerry Sato, all these people that I know from USA Volleyball. And I go, oh, this is interesting. And then he broke the news because Marv was the past Friar winner last year.
Right.
Yeah. He broke the news. And so it's just really exciting. You know, everyone can see that smile on the video that I had. And I was just truly honored. But the way it happened, it's just pretty funny from that standpoint.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. I don't think I'd heard that before. We had Marv on last year, right before the Friar, actually right before he was awarded the Friar Award at the Hall of Fame. So we had him on and talked to him about his, you know, experience and memories too. So I'm excited to hear kind of your side of some of those stories maybe as we dive into this. But Marv is a great guy. He was awesome to talk to.
Yeah, they always try and surprise a Friar winner, and they definitely did. This was a shock.
That was a success. That's awesome. Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, you've worked with, you were maybe played with some of the past Friar Award winners. Maybe not specifically, you know, a Friar winner, but is there anyone from your career that you kind of look back on as just having a huge impact on where you got to?
Well, it's interesting. There's two things. First of all, I grew up in Laguna Beach. Obviously, Laguna Beach is known for a lot of great volleyball players on the beach side. But before that, you know, I was a basketball player. I grew up playing basketball. My dad played basketball at Cal back in the late 50s when they're really good. And then my mom was kind of an athlete anyways, but they both went to Cal, and we used to go to a place called the Lair of the Bear. It was a summer camp that for the Cal alumni. And at the Lair of the Bear, one of my dad's good friends from college was Al Monaco. And so Al Monaco was very involved with USA Volleyball for a long time. And so that's where I first kind of started or got a little bit about volleyball, playing at the Lair when I was a young, before teenager and as a teenager. But I was always on the basketball court, right, from that standpoint. And so Al always says, oh, I'm the one who introduced you to volleyball. But really, it was my mom who got me involved in clinics. It was in junior high. I said, I didn't want to go to volleyball clinic. I thought it was a girl sport, right? And everything. And I got out there and I actually saw how hard, you can hit the ball, right? From that standpoint, they go, oh, this is not too bad. But I grew up primarily as a basketball player, but my mom really influenced me to move into the volleyball. And I did both in high school and got recruited for both to play basketball at some schools and then, also volleyball. But so those are the two inspirational people in my life for volleyball. And then I'll just circle back because Al Monaco, after I was done playing on the national team, is the one who got me involved to help out with USA Volleyball. And he says, hey, you with your education from Stanford and experience, we'd love to have you serve on the audit and finance committee going forward for USA Volleyball. So it's interesting how it all came full circle from that standpoint.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely want to circle back to what you're doing now with USA Volleyball too. But wanted to touch on that because that was going to be my next question is, how you were introduced to the game of volleyball. And you mentioned Al and you mentioned your mom. Is there anything you'd like to expand on that? What were the like early hooks for you that got you, to really love the game of volleyball?
Well, there's two. I remember growing up in Laguna Beach. I grew up in a beach area called Three Arch Bay. And Steve Blue, Leif Hansen, who became a very good beach player, Adam Johnson, who is a good beach player, came down and played every once in a while. But every once in a while, we'd line up and pick teams. And this is when I was a teenager and pick teams to play. And my best friends were always playing. And I go, I was practicing basketball. But we'd line up and they'd pick four on each side. And I never got picked, right? Oh, Sky, you're tall, which is good, but you're kind of uncoordinated and you can't pass the ball. And so that was the real hook and said, hey, I want to be picked on these teams and I want to play. So I went home that day. I was like, okay, this sucks. And went home and started passing the ball against the backboard of the basketball that I had. And so that was my really first kind of chip on shoulder. Like, hey, I want to become a volleyball player from that standpoint. And then just kind of moving forward, I remember a point in high school, my senior year in high school, we got an opportunity to work and be a volunteer at the Olympics. And the Olympics for volleyball was at the Long Beach facilities. And so it's pretty cool because I was on the floor and, helping with the balls. But during the sessions that when a game ended, I had to run up the stats all the way up to the ABC. And Marv was up there.
Oh, cool.
With I'm forgetting who announced it. Marlo was playing. This is in 84, right? And then I ran back down. So I got to watch volleyball at a very high level right there on the floor. And I was just getting into the sport a little bit more. And then I saw the gold medal match when U.S. beat Brazil. And I turned to my best friend there, Casey O'Callaghan, and said, hey, I'm going to win or I want to win one of those one day. And this is 1984. And we can go fast forward to 88. But little did I know, 4 years later, I'd be in that position. So those are the two defining moments for me really kind of getting involved and going to a higher level for volleyball.
That is so cool. It just like makes me think like, the Olympic Games, Tokyo is a little different story because of COVID. There weren't fans there, but you never know who's going to be in the arena, who's going to be watching and who might 4 years later be on that Olympic team like you were yourself. That's so cool that were you just helping out with volleyball or did you get to experience any other Olympic sports as well?
Experience a little bit of other Olympic sports, but I was helping out primarily with volleyball. So it's just a great opportunity to see the sport, right? And that's the beauty of Olympics is that it's a very national come together of countries. It doesn't matter what's going on. Unfortunately, we have politics involved with the LA Olympics and such, but it's a very national type of opportunity for all these countries to get together and just say, hey, we're just here to celebrate sport and the best, athletes in the world come together to watch, these great athletes compete at the highest level. And so that's the best thing or the nicest thing about Olympics. You can put aside, whatever else is going on in the world to be, cheer on your country from that standpoint.
Before we get too far into your Olympic history and experience, because I really want to get to that. But I want to kind of start with, you know, your college career, your college experience playing volleyball. And, you know, we just had the NCAA Men's Volleyball Championship. Congratulations to
John Sparrow.
John Sparrow.
Yeah. Get off the rocket move to win for UCLA. That was awesome.
Right. Yeah. That was really cool to see. I know he's, you know, a great season for UCLA. He's excited about that. And I know he's just dying to get back in the USA gym too, to get our team ready for Paris. But what was your experience like in college playing? I know you made it to an NCAA Final Four. You played at Stanford. What was your experience playing collegiate volleyball?
Yeah, I had an opportunity. I chose to play volleyball over baseball during high school. So I played basketball in the winter, and then I transitioned to volleyball in the spring. And we won three CIFs at Laguna Beach in a row, my freshman year, sophomore, and junior year. And so volleyball was obviously very big in Laguna. So I had the opportunity to play in the club and get recognized. And the recruiting process is pretty interesting because, you know, I got recruited by UCLA, USC, and all their teams, but then Stanford, you know, with my ties to Berkeley and education part, Stanford was in the mix from that standpoint. But I remember Al Skates, he doesn't usually come to people's recruits' houses, but he did come down to Laguna but he stopped by. We had dinner, and then he saw my SAT, my recent SAT scores. He goes, "Wow, those are pretty good." And so, does that mean you're going to be leaning towards Stanford now? And I said, "No, I haven't decided. It's down between UCLA," and UCLA has won a lot of national championships. Obviously, Al's a great coach, Karch, and a lot of the guys I played with on the Olympic team come from there. And it's down to UCLA and Stanford. And at the end of the day, I wanted to be a little different. Stanford had never made the playoffs. I could have gone to UCLA, probably won a few national championships, all great and everything. But, you know, hey, I wanted to be different. Yeah, I didn't want to be in the footsteps of Karch and all those guys. And so I decided on Stanford. And it's interesting because the last statement that Al said, "Well, you'll never win a national championship at Stanford." And so that was my next chip on my shoulder, right? It's like, okay, we have to make Stanford a great team. And we had two great coaches. We had Don Shaw and Fred Sturm, who became the Olympic coach for me in 92 standpoint. And then they split off after my freshman year. Don took the women and Fred Main with the men. So we had started to build a team. We had John Root, who also played on the Olympic team with me. So we built the team up. We made playoffs my freshman year, and we got better and better. And just to kind of finish the story, so I won in high school. We'll get into the Olympic Park. I took my senior year off from Stanford because I started playing with the national team during the summer. You know, I played on a junior national team my freshman year with Eric Sato, who also played on the Olympic team together. And in my sophomore year, I started training. I lived in Laguna, and I could drive down to San Diego every day and start training with the national team there. And then I played in a few tournaments in the national team. And then same thing in my junior year, we played in a lot bigger tournaments, and I got a fair amount of playing time. So that came to the decision after my junior year was, okay, do I sit out, go for it, and try and make the Olympic team in 88, or do I go back to Stanford and finish my last year? And so I decided, hey, I might never have that opportunity again. I go for it. And it turned out great. But anyway, so, you know, we'll get to the part about the Olympics and winning there. So I won high school. I won the Olympics in my senior year. When I came back after the Olympics, it was between us and UCLA. We tied for the league. We had to go through the playoffs, but we ended up playing UCLA in the finals at Pauley Pavilion, which is a tough place to play, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so, and then we end up losing in four sets, which is a tough match. And to this day, I run into Al at different events and stuff. He'll come up to me and said, "See, Fortune, I told you, you'll never win a national championship." So, I'm like, yeah, right. Yeah, oh, you're right. We gave it a great run. But since then, Stanford's won three national championships. And I like to think we kind of pioneered, you know, between John Root and myself, pioneered Stanford to get to where it is as a strong college for men's volleyball going forward. So a pretty funny story.
No, I love that. I love the recruiting story with Al, and he knew right away before probably even walking in. He was like, all right, you're going to Stanford because of that SCT score that you had.
But my mom and my parents are from Cal. And so, it's a tough sell for Al. That's for sure.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of ties to that area. That's fun. Yeah. There's a wealth of just volleyball legacy that's come out of Stanford. And like you mentioned, three national championships, but you know, not that long ago, the men's collegiate game was in a rough spot because a lot of programs were kind of on that cutting room floor of getting removed from the collegiate athletic space. But and Stanford was one of them. Luckily, that did not happen. But were you involved at all in that, you know, in those talks of keeping men's volleyball around at Stanford? Recently, we had Kavika Soji on the podcast, and he was pretty involved in that. But could you speak to that a little bit? And, you know, obviously men's volleyball was huge for you, but, you know, why would you like to see, you know, the men's game grow, especially at that, you know, that highest level, at the Division I level?
It was a shock for us at Stanford. Obviously, there's 36 sports at Stanford. That's a lot. And nowadays with the budgets and stuff. But Stanford is known for being the lead in Olympic athletes, right?
Yeah.
If you took Stanford alone as a country in the Olympics, they are either like the sixth or seventh top country medals, right? So you have swimmers, you have everything, and volleyball helps from that standpoint. So it's a real shock that men's volleyball was thrown into the group. But, you know, there's wrestling and there's some other minor sports. I think the athletic department or the university miscalculated the strength of men's volleyball. And we are one of the leaders to really get the sport back. Some of the other sports were having a tough time, but we immediately got together. I can't say I took a huge part in it, but you know, I appreciate John Sparrow. I appreciate USA Volleyball. Jamie was very instrumental in all reaching out to Stanford and say, hey, you know, men's volleyball is the second fastest growing sport, or number one behind with lacrosse, right?
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot more opportunities for diversity, for adding teams that's coming on board. And here yet you're cutting the sport. And from our history at Stanford, we've had a U.S. Men's volleyball player play in the Olympics since I first started playing in 88 for every Olympics, right? And so they're cutting a great tradition that was part of Stanford. And so, I must give a lot of credit to Dave Saeda and the team. You know, Adam Keefe, ex-basketball player, his wife, Kristen, we played at Stanford together. We're very involved in making sure that we can raise enough money to endow the sport. And that's what happened. We raised over $10 million without the big donors, you know, with just Stanford volleyball alumni incentives to endow the sport.
And that's awesome.
Now we have men's volleyball going forward. So, but it's a wake up call, right? It's tough what's going on in the NCAA. I just found that it was surprising that Stanford was going down that route. When you think of Stanford, you think of the Olympics. And that's, I think, at the end of the day, what ruled out from that standpoint.
Yeah, it was definitely a shock to me as well. And like you said, like Stanford could be its own country with the amount of Olympians that come out of that program, out of that school. But happy to see that, you know, men's volleyball survived that and it's doing well. And I know just recently, I think our producer Curtis mentioned that Missouri and one other state just sanctioned boys high school volleyball. So that's only going to help keep growing the boys pipeline up into the college ranks to help strengthen those programs and continue the growth of the sport. So exciting to see Kentucky. Thank you, Curtis. Kentucky was the other state that sanctioned boys volleyball, high school volleyball. So
yeah, shout out to John Sparrow. He does a great job with a group of really promoting and growing the sport. And that was kind of my philosophy. I went to Stanford. A lot more kids saw that in Northern California, right? Hey, this is a great opportunity for boys to play in that sport. So shout out for John and his involvement from that standpoint.
Yeah, John Sparrow's First Point Volleyball Foundation. Yeah, they're doing a lot of great work with that foundation. So, and we just had John on a a few months back, and he talked a lot about that as well. So,
and they were helpful. They were helpful during getting Stanford men's volleyball back. I think they saw, hey, if Stanford loses men's volleyball, then a lot of other colleges could look at, hey, we could cut men's volleyball too. And so I think that was very inspirational to make sure that all the schools involved would stay with men's volleyball, because it's a great game.
Yeah, and just I was looking back at what episode that was for any listeners listening right now who are interested in learning more about First Point Volleyball Foundation and John Sproul's work there. That's episode 54, I believe, that you can go back and listen to that. So awesome. That, I mean, thank you so much for sharing that story of your involvement with Stanford and helping save that program. But would like to move into your Olympic career as well. But what was your journey to the men's national team? You mentioned that you were with the team in, I think, your senior year at college, and then came back to finish your career at Stanford. But what were those kind of early stages in your career with the men's national team?
Yeah, I think it really started my senior year in high school when I went to, you know, volunteer at the Olympics. I was part of an all-star team that was out of the Palisades. And part of that team was Eric Sato, a teammate of mine in the 88 Olympics. And we played together. And his brother, Gary Sato, was the coach. And so we played over in Taiwan. And that was really kind of the first step to kind of getting on the Olympic team, even before I got to college, right? And so with Gary's involvement as the assistant coach in 88 with Marv Dunphy, I think they knew my ability and capabilities. And so they kind of grew me along. Hey, play college, and during the summer, we'll have you train with the team and start making inroads up there. I remember my first or second summer, and when I was going to join the team to before 88, Steve Timmons looked at me and says, oh, you look like a young Timmons, so I got to take you to my barber, right? And he had that red flat top.
Iconic yeah. Hair. Yeah.
I don't have the red hair, but he took me to the barber. It wasn't quite the same, but still, I appreciate the shout out by Timmons that kind of took me under his wing and do that. So, but that led to, you know, my decision to play with this team. At the time, I was a backup middle, 6'6". I was like the third tallest on the team behind Craig Bach and Doug Partee, who were about the same height. This is in 88. I was a backup middle and just had a lot of chances to play. And you know, if things weren't going well for the team, they'd be, but hey, let's put the young kid in and see what he can do. And when we went to the Olympics, we only took 3 medals. And we had back then you didn't have a libero. So we had a couple specialists, right, as Eric Sato and Troy Tanner. So went to the Olympics. I guess we'll start on there. And here I am, a 21-year-old with Eric Sato. We're both 21. And Eric Sato was known for coming in, doing the great jump serves all the time, right? And we'll come back to that. But we, you know, in Korea, it was in South Korea, we had to play very early, like at 9 a.m. in Korean time, because that was live back in the U.S., right? And so they wanted it live. And so that's a very challenging stuff for us to wake up in the Olympic Village at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. to get to the facility in time and play that early matches. And so we had a lot of rough matches in the preliminary rounds, getting used to it. And so I was lucky. I was able to play a fair amount, because if things weren't going pretty well, hey, you know, Scott, why don't you go in? And so I got to play a fair amount. I was primarily a back row specialist, but got to play in the front row a little bit from that standpoint. But we had a great run. The other thing about the 88 team, it was one of the greatest teams ever. And that's what the FIVB is kind of labeled it as. There's another Russian team, I think in 72 or something, but the 88 Olympic team was one of the best teams ever. And just to be part of that was great. And so we went through, we won our semifinal match. And then obviously it was set up for US versus Russia, US versus the Soviet Union, the big rivalry back then. And we met in the finals. And I'll just quit, fast forward. We were up 2-1. Back then, it was not fast scoring, right? You have to get a point side out side of things. But we're up 14-8, or I came in about 13-8 in the back row. Played back row in the defense, and then I stayed in the front row at 14-8, and they subbed Eric Sato in at that point. And we were serving for match point, and good old Eric Sato ripped a jump ball or a jump serve, and the pass, here I was in the middle, and the pass started coming over my way. And you've been in movies where everything slowed down. If you've ever been in a car accident, and I have once, your mind just slows down. And exactly what happened. Here I am in the Olympics, 21 years old, and I was looking around as the ball was coming over me. I was looking around like, oh, I can't believe I'm here. I'm gonna hit the last point, right? And then it sped up, and I'm like, oh, I got to hit this thing as hard as I can. And then I spiked it down. Just raised my arm and just celebrated with that great team as part of the win. And everyone says today, hey, well, what's the greatest moment in the Olympics? Hey, I had the great opportunity to hit the last point. But the best moment is, I remember, and there's a picture up in USA Volleyball offices of us standing there on the podium, all of us watching our flag going up. And we didn't have tears in our eyes, but you can see how much it meant to us. And that's the best moment, representing your country to the best you can and coming out, obviously, as the best in the world was pretty amazing. So that was a great run in 88 that, I owe a lot of people being part of that great team for accepting me and Marv and having the confidence in me to play the role I did.
Gosh, to be 21 years old and for that moment to kind of fall on your shoulders, that's incredible. And you mentioned, that's an incredible memory moment. A lot of people think that might be your favorite one, but you mentioned standing on the podium with the national anthem and your flag coming down as being kind of your most memorable moment. But could you speak a little bit about what that means personally to represent USA, to represent your country, and then to stand at the top of the podium and hear your national anthem playing?
Yeah, it's what you aim for, right? There's nothing more. We have a great country here, despite all the politics that are going on. But to represent your country in a world or global event is proud to be part of that, where you have 130 million Americans cheering you on for your success. Not only that, but it's working together, being part of that team, and everyone having a role or everyone coming together to reach that pinnacle and to be the best in the world is the accomplishment. And you're around a lot of other great athletes, from swimmers and everything else. But for us to repeat after 84, but to do it as convincingly as we did, was pretty impressive and just a moment I cherish.
And you went to three Olympic Games, 88, 92, 96. For you, what's that? For a lot of our listeners, they've never been to an Olympic Games. They might watch it on TV. But for you, what's that Olympic moment for you that separates it from a normal international competition? Is it, walking out on the opening ceremonies, hanging out in the Olympic Village? What's that Olympic memory, distinguishing moment for you?
First of all, it's every 4 years, right? You play in international tournaments, which are really big. We have the World Cup, we have the World Championships, that's big for volleyball, but there's nothing bigger than the Olympics, right? And for volleyball, that's kind of a marquee sport for the Olympics. And they always had the men's indoor finals the very last day. So there's two things about the Olympics. It's stressful. We play the whole 2 weeks and you're there to win, right? You're there to focus and be successful. You play the whole 2 weeks. 60-70% of the athletes are done after the first week.
We're
coming home to the Olympic Village. And I remember in Barcelona, it's really hot. It's right on the beach. We didn't even have AC in these, we're sleeping on twin beds. We normally sleep on nice, queen beds in hotels. When we travel, we're in these twin beds and we have a loud fan going on to keep you cool. So it's a grind for 2 weeks. Yes, you're there, you get to see some other events, but you have to be very cognizant that, hey, you're here to win or to be successful, right? And so that's the tough part about the Olympics. But meeting the other athletes and eating meeting them at the meals and then talking to them, seeing some of the other events, and just being part of the overall event is awesome from that standpoint. So there's two things: to get there, to win it, you have to You have to make sure you concentrate and not get distracted. But then once that's over, you get that one day, that closing ceremony, right? To go out and celebrate. You know, the opening ceremonies are very challenging. You're on your feet a lot. You hear that, right? We had to play a game the very next day. We ended up playing against Japan in the 92 Olympics, and we lost, even though there was kind of disputed call. And we'd won the match, but they came back and awarded Japan the win. And so that's when we all shaved our heads. We became known as the American volleyball team, right? And by the way, I'll never shave my head again because I did not. But we came back. We had to fight through. We came back. We lost to Brazil, who was the top team that year. Because of the pool play, we had to play Brazil in the semifinals, and we lost to them in a tight match. And then we ended up beating Cuba 3-1 for the bronze medal. So if you're going to be there, you want to make sure you medal, right? So, but that was a great moment to – I was the captain of the team to, you know, represent the country, be the captain of the team, and lead them to, you know, unfortunately not a gold medal, but a bronze medal. So it's interesting. I'm so proud of the U.S. women's team for winning their first gold medal, like, yes, in Tokyo. Yeah. They've always had the talent. They've won like three silver, two or three, you know, bronze, but they've never won the gold medal. The men have won three gold medals. So it's just, you know, we're all in this together, right? We all support each other. And that was just awesome for them to see them come through and win the gold medal in Tokyo. So hopefully we can get the men back up there coming up in the next, 2 years now or 3 years.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. 6'6" athlete, 6'6", 6'8", pushing 7 foot on a twin bed. Like, yeah, come on, can we get some more beds in there? Bigger beds.
Well, that's the interesting thing. At 6'6", I was the third tallest in the 88 team. And I knew, okay, this sport's getting taller, and you know, the athletes are definitely long.
Right, yeah,
and, length. Yeah. And so I knew I had to switch. And I owe a lot of that to my high school coach, Bill Ashton. He says, oh, you're a you know, they put the tall guys in the middle. You're a middle blocker. But he had everyone pass. And we're, you know, he had everyone pass in practice and in the games for Laguna Beach High School. And so that's where I really learned to refine my passing and play defense. Now, as a middle blocker, you don't even get the chance to play defense anymore, right? Because of libero, which is great. I like the system that it is. So I knew after 88, I came back to Stanford and I said, I need to move to outside. I need to use my passing skills and my height to move outside. And that was the best career move I made, right? So it elongated my career from that standpoint. But by 92, when I played my third Olympics in Atlanta, I was probably the third smallest on the team. That's it changed, right? You had Lloyd Ball, you had Nygaard, you had That's Brian right, Ivey, yeah. A lot of guys who, you know, are 6'8", 6'9". And so that was the best move I could make to move to the outside. But I owe a lot to, you know, just my coaches who, you know, taught me passing and defense. That was very important. And I tell kids, play beach, play all kinds of different volleyball, because you learn those skills that way, right? You know, too many times it's specialized, and you should be learning all the skills no matter what.
And that's, I mean, going back to what hooked you, right? That's what hooked you is being a better passer, because you weren't getting picked up on those teams, right? And so that definitely paid off for you.
Exactly. And then when I joined the national team in the beginning, I was a defense. I had played middle, but I was also had to play defense. I was a defensive specialist. So I really had to craft that sport. And what I remember one moment, my very first summer is down there, I let a tip fall behind Karch. Karch was blocking. I let the tip go down. And literally, you know, Karch is very intense. And he went off a big yell. That is your tip. And did I learn? I never let another tip fall. Well, I did more than two. I learned, okay, I got to get that tip no matter what. And so those are the inspirational moments that you got to learn and get better.
For sure. That's awesome. Yeah. I love hearing about Karch's competitive side, because, yeah. I mean, you can definitely see it from him coaching, but I think being an athlete was just a whole another animal for him too. But speaking of Karch, and you mentioned the historic gold win for the women's team in Tokyo. Did you, you know, talk to Karch afterwards, or, you know, congratulate him on, you know, coaching that team up to that moment?
Yeah. You know, Karch is amazing in the sense that, I went and played professionally over And then I'll get after the Olympics, and we'll get back to the card store. And I played professionally in Italy for a year. That's where everyone was going, right, to play professionally in Italy. Right. But after that, I said, hey, let me explore some different countries. You know, you enjoy living over there and learning the language and playing, right? We had an okay team in Italy. It wasn't one of the strongest, but I said, hey. So I went to Greece, and I also played in Croatia. And those were two of the best experiences because they really never had American volleyball player play in those cities. And in Greece, I played in the top team, Mulatos, and we got to play in the European Championship. Not Mulatos, sorry. Olympiakos in Greece. We played in the European Championships. And that was great. And then after 96, I played in Croatia. You know, it was me, a Russian coach, and all these Croatians who can jump and hit the snot out of the ball. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. You know, I'm getting older. I don't have to hit as much. I don't do as much. But it's just great to see the mentality of what American can bring from a practice standpoint. And I think that's what they miss. You know, in Italy and Greece, to get the volleyball players to run around, you have to play soccer for like 20 minutes before the practice, right? That's the only way they'll run. I remember a story in Greece. The first time we were running, we went to this park. We had a Russian coach there. Went to this park, and we went uphill a little bit, and then we went downhill. I looked next to me. The setter was running next to me, and then everyone else behind me was walking, and they started walking across the shortcut to go to the other side because the coaches couldn't see them anymore, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And then they had a fountain on the other side. They sprayed water in their face to look like they're sweating. And then when I came running back, I caught them, and then it's just a mentality back there. So what I tried to instill was, okay, to be the best and to play at a high level on matches, you have to practice that way. And it's a great experience in Croatia, where we ended up third in the European Championship. You know, the country had never done anything like that. And you know, so I think it was great to pioneer these different countries. And we saw a lot of different Americans start to go into a lot of these different countries now because of it. And so that's kind of an honor or something I was proud about to play, not just in Italy, but in a lot of these different countries from that standpoint. It's tough, you know, over there, but it's a great experience. I recommend any volleyball player, hey, take time when you're done with college, go play a couple of years. You get to learn languages, you get to learn different cultures and play the game. You know, it depends, you know, what level you're at from a financial standpoint. But I think it's an experience anyone should be part of and be involved with from that standpoint. But anyways, Karch called me up after playing in Croatia about 8 years out of the blue. He called me up. He said, Scott, you know, he was announcing, he was assistant coach with Hugh. He really wanted, you know, become a better coach. And here's Karch calling me up. I'm like, Karch, I'm sure you know everything. But he called me up and said, what does this Russian coach do when you're in Croatia, right? What was different? And so he was just wanting to learn every, you know, coach and what they did in these different countries and such. And so I went through a few things of how he ran practices, you know, what he did differently than the U.S. way. And he left the Karch, you know, to become the best coach in the world, you have to leave no stone unturned, right? From finding out how people do it differently. And you know, he did a great job of, you know, obviously, you know, becoming the gold medal women's coach for the U.S. team.
That's such a cool card story that I had never heard before either. But that, yeah, that he didn't have to be in the gym watching the Russian coach and observing and trying to get better, but he, you know, talk to you and learn that way. But, you know, just, yeah, testament to Karch just being the lifelong learner he is and trying to get better, and obviously has paid off, and exciting to see the team in Paris just go and defend their gold. It's going to be a lot of fun.
No, definitely. It'll be great.
What I also love your story about tricking the team into conditioning to play soccer.
Yeah, in soccer you had to run, so it's like in basketball court, right. But you had to run the back half, had to be past half court if you scored a goal the goal to count, right? That's the only way you could get these Europeans to run, right? They're all
so funny
in the showers or afterwards. But you know, they love soccer. They love their soccer, right? Or football.
Yeah. Love to hear about your experience in Greece and Croatia as well and playing international volleyball. And obviously still a lot of our U.S. athletes go and play overseas, and a lot of them you know, that's their whole career, is they're playing overseas all over the place. But yeah, what were some of your favorite memories playing playing international volleyball for those international clubs?
You know, it's getting back to like, you know, representing the club, representing as an American and being, you know, one of the best in the world and part of the USA Volleyball, is bringing over those work ethics to these clubs and say, hey, if you want to win, this is what it takes. You know, they took care of me. I was in a fortunate situation, got a car, a really nice restaurant and place to live. But it's just helping out, you know, these different countries. You know, Italy, they had great players. Greece, not so much. I think they learned a lot from me. And Croatia, definitely, because those guys became really good players as they are. But that was the experience. And for me, I enjoyed traveling, enjoying being part of a different culture from that standpoint. So I took a little different path. I decided to go play overseas versus, you know, playing much beach. You know, I had a chance to play maybe two man, but I still loved indoor game, playing overseas and playing for the U.S. team versus playing a lot of efforts on the beach side on the two man game.
Well, speaking of beach, you did have a little bit of a career in beach, and I think specifically extensively with the four-man beach pro tour that was in the U.S. Can you like talk a little bit about, you know, that transition going? Obviously, you grew up in California, you know, played beach volleyball, but kind of that transition going from, you know, an extensive indoor career into beach volleyball.
Yeah, I played a couple AVB tournaments with some of my Laguna teammates, Steve Blue first, and then Adam Johnson. I played a couple tournaments with Adam Johnson. We did do well. I always say, hey, Adam, I you know, after playing with me, you got a new partner, and look at your career took off. Clearly, it was playing with me that was not holding you. So I keep joking with him, but yeah, but that was that. But for me, it's sticking the indoor. We had the four-man tour, which is perfect. You know, it was tough because you practice 5 days a week with the national team and you know, in San Diego. And then we flew out Friday afternoon. You go play Saturday and Sunday, which is a great event. And I still think it's a great event for both men and women. And it's a different brand of volleyball than two-door beach. I think there's more rallies. There's a little more excitement. I always thought, you know, putting those mix together, we should have had, you know, two teams. And then you can blend down a mix of men and women on the beach together. But it's a fun event. You know, we won. My teams won a lot of those events. We were hot or cold, it seems like. Every year you had a draft. And so I really enjoyed playing with new players. You know, a lot of teams played with the same guys. They know who they can play with. So, you know, one year I recruited Alan Knipe, you know, as a coach of Long Beach. Tom Hoff, when he got a Long Beach State, before he played on the national team, I took him under kind of my wing and the four-man, and that really got his start. And then he joined the national team from that standpoint. So I think that was the neat part, to be able to play. Dan Hannon was another one to play with. A lot of these guys we played with in college, and gave him the opportunity to play on the four-man beach from that side. So, you know, I think it was a really good, great experience for me. Enjoyed playing the beach because it's different from the indoor. And the four-man was just another extension of the indoor side of things.
Yeah, it kind of seems like a nice mix in between indoor and beach, is, you know, from the doubles beach to sixes indoor, kind of a nice mix there.
Yeah, and I still, unfortunately, you know, with beach, unfortunately, what's happened with beach, there's not that many opportunities for kids to play, right, after college. You know, I think it's great for all the women's programs and then playing. But unfortunately, you know, indoor, there's still a lot of demand for U.S. players to play overseas. The beach side is a little more challenging, right, unless you're the top players playing on the FIVB. That's the unfortunate part. You know, I think we have such a groundswell, great grassroots level of strong beach players. The women continue to do well at the Olympics, and the men need to kind of regroup and get back to their strength there. I wish there was more opportunities for players to play after college from a professional level. So I'm sure on the beach, unfortunately, there's not.
Yeah, I know the women's collegiate beach scene has grown a lot with, you know, the NCAA championship now a thing and going strong for several years now. And then boys club beach is starting to grow a lot more across the country. So hopefully, you know, we kind of see what we've seen with the women's and girls side of beach kind of go over into the boys and men's side. Hopefully we can see that in the future years to come.
Yeah, hats off to Dane Blanton, another Laguna.
That's right. Yeah, shout out.
Yeah, the coach of USC. He won the Olympics. He's had a great career. So we have some pretty good Laguna Beach alumni for sure on the volleyball side. And now Dane's part of USC volleyball from I think the board or one of the levels, which is great. Giving back.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, shout out to Dane, and that's three back-to-back-to-back at USC. So that's just incredible to see that program just flourish as well under Dane's leadership. Kind of go back to the four-man, you won the 94 title. What were kind of some of your favorite memories from that? Was there a huge crowd around, standing room only type thing? Or, you know, what were your memories from that title game?
You got to remember, like in the early 90s, beach volleyball was the sport, right?
Yeah.
Before you got to a lot of these, what they call them, you know, the skateboarding and a lot of the other sports, beach volleyball was the draw. And you know, we were on ESPN and you know, EVP had their own TV network, right? And it was a big deal. And so we're kind of like rock stars when we fly into St. Louis or Chicago or playing these different cities, and we had sponsors and you know, we did all kinds of appearances. So it was great. But the level of volleyball was very, very strong. I mean, Bob Stefurlich with Dusty Dvorak, Craig Buck, you know, a lot of the top national team players were playing on the four-man beach because it's the easy extension of the indoor game. So my challenge was always, you know, one year, I remember, I think it was 94, we had Tom Duke and Dan Greenbaum. Dan Greenbaum was playing me on the national team as a setter, and Jeff Williams, not the best team out there, but we seemed to win a lot of those different events because we played well together from that standpoint. And so I think that was just a great event, right, that people can come to. You're outdoors, you got the music, and to this day, the number one ticket that people want at the Olympics is what? Beach volleyball, right? Because that's the event that you want to attend, you know, with outdoor and the sun and great athletes playing, and then you have the music going on. So it's just a great event. And we just continue need to grow that in the U.S. and get, you know, the AVP or USA Volleyball to continue to offer more and more beach tournaments, because it is a great event for people to come to.
Yeah, I remember my first beach ball. I started at USA Volleyball in 2014, and I don't come from an extensive volleyball background. I discovered it, you know, in college, played collegiate club at Texas State University. But so I came in kind of late. So I had never really experienced professional volleyball before in person. And one of my first events was the World Series of Volleyball. And I think that was in Long Beach, if I remember right. And that was my first event. First match was Phil and Todd watching those two play, which was incredible. But that was my first exposure to it. I couldn't believe the atmosphere of a professional beach volleyball event. Like you just mentioned, it's just like the music blaring. It's just a beach party atmosphere. And that, I mean, that was just incredible. And now I've seen, like you've mentioned, with the 90s and the ABP tour, but just those iconic photos of, for example, the Manhattan Beach Open, and just people looking up from the pier, and just incredible. And, you know, hopefully, I know the AVP tour is still going on and going strong, but just hoping that we can continue to grow beach volleyball and kind of get into those, you know, collegiate ranks, especially from the men's side, would be great.
I agree. The more opportunities, the better.
Yeah.
It's breaking, right?
Yeah. Kind of moving on into what you're doing now, and specifically with USA Volleyball, you mentioned at the top, just the, you know, the committees you're involved in, the finance and budget committee, audit committee. Could you talk a little bit about your work that you're doing now with USA Volleyball and, you know, the board of directors foundation as well?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was Al Monaco who I met, you know, my parents' friend way back when at the Lair of the Bear, got me involved when I was done in 1997. I played my last year in Croatia. And I said, "Hey, Scott, love to have you. You know, with your education from Stanford and interest in getting into finance, would love to have you part of USA Volleyball, and primarily in the finance, budget, and audit committee." You know, I don't think a lot of people know that all these important boards are the key boards, and at the board level, you have to have athlete representation. And you know, this moved up from 25%. I think the Stevens Act was 20 or 25% of the participants have to be athletes, right? And I think it's moved up to 30% now. You know, they've gotten rid of a little bit of the terms. And so I was one of the first ones to kind of get involved in a bunch of finance and audit committee. And, you know, I thank Al for getting me involved. I remember my first meeting, this was 97 from that standpoint. The USA Volleyball budget was $3 million. We'd just gone through a fair amount of money. You know, we made a windfall after the 84 Olympics, and we've been through that. And USA Volleyball wasn't in a very strong position financially. And we're counting in our budgets the pencils that, you know, we're giving out to each of the employees at USA Volleyball. But, you know, hats off to, you know, Doug Beal. Was part of that group, Rebecca Howard. And then really on the Budget and Finance Committee was Kevin Tuig, Stu McDowell, Fred Windable was joined later. But they really took me under their wing. You know, it's tough for athletes to get involved because we don't have that business experience right away, right? You're playing volleyball. I always knew I wanted to get investments in finance, but I had to put that on hold for my career. But I got involved with this committee, and they brought me under their wings. And I, you know, by the end, you know, I did that for, I think, 12 years on the Finance and Budget and Audit Committee, you know, helping out as the athlete representative and making sure financially, you know, things were sound for USA Volleyball. It's definitely improved, you know, through the leadership of Doug Beal and this group. We saw that budget of $3 million is going to $37 million now, right? So it's a great sport, and we're able to fund a lot of the grassroots programs to everything else from that standpoint. Also, as part of the USOC as an athlete, Olympic athlete, part of that committee. So that's great to you know, look into the drug testing, look into the different issues for the athletes on that side. And then most recently, I've been part of the foundation. They started that about 16 years ago. And I've been more in part of the investment committee, making sure that fiduciary, doing our fiduciary responsibility on the investment side. The foundation, you know, good concept. It's just been difficult to, we haven't put much effort to raise money. I think the foundation's important, and USA Volleyball needs to be important to continue to cultivate the alumni that's been part of this game, you know, do more events. And we're starting to do that now, is just continue to get everyone who's played this great sport involved with USA Volleyball, bring together back the, you know, the friendships and relationships you had, and then also help build the foundation, right? You know, where there's a lot of needs still for, you know, we need a training center for the indoor teams. You know, we need to continue to build and grow the sport. Like you said, more NCAA men's volleyball sports and stuff. So
right.
There's a lot of needs that the foundation can address and help. And I've just been fortunate to be part of that and help, you know, continue to champion that going forward.
I'm sure, like, really cool and exciting for you to kind of see the organization and see volleyball itself, I guess, from a different lens or a different perspective. You know, you're an athlete for so long, and then now you're kind of on the other side, and you kind of get to see all the workings, all the behind the scenes of it. And like you mentioned, see the budget grow from, you know, 3 million to 37 million. I can thank you for your continued dedication to the sport and just giving back to the sport. I, you know, that's just really cool. And you know.
Yeah, a lot really of people awesome. And a lot bad odds of that. A lot of people don't realize all the volunteers, right? That part of the board and all these committee, all these volunteers, these hours, these meetings, and all the work they put in, and that's the nice opportunity, the honor of receiving the Friar Award, because there's a lot of people who are giving back to help grow the sport. And just to be part of that group, I'm honored and proud to receive the award, because there's a lot of very honorable recipients that should be Friar Award winners too, from that standpoint.
Well, I hope you enjoy the ceremony, the banquet that's going to be happening in Dallas, the Hall of Fame ceremony, and getting to see old teammates, old friends, celebrating with your family as well. So I really hope you enjoy your time in Dallas. And I know we talked a little bit before we started recording, but you mentioned you weren't going to be playing in the Adult Nationals, but hope to see you back in that next year.
Yeah, I try not to play too much. I love backpacking, hiking, traveling.
Okay,
A little bit easier. I've had a hip replacement about 16 years ago, so I have to go a little bit easier. In San Diego, I still get together with a lot of the players that we played with.
Oh, cool.
In San Diego. But Dallas would be great. Shout out to Balboa Bay. And, Sean Stewart always puts a great team together, and we always seems to be in the finals, whether it's the 45s, 50s, or I'm now in the 55 age group, which is nice. They lower the net 2 inches. So Nick
there you go. Sure. That's awesome.
But my body's held up well. I enjoy playing still, but I need to take a year off every once in a while here for sure.
I hear you. Just really quickly, would love to hear, your perspective on, just volleyball as a lifelong sport. What's your, what's your pitch for that? And why do you love playing at USA Volleyball Nationals too?
Yeah, it's about the friends you make. It's about, the beauty about volleyball. You can play it on the beach, you can play it in the grass, you can play it indoor, right? And so I think anyone who's played this game, whether it's at the junior level to the collegiate level and beyond, it's about your teammates. It's about playing together, having a great time while competing. Yeah, we're all competitive and we want to do well. But it's about having a great time with your teammates. And that's what I think the Nationals brings, right? And it's great to see so many players from throughout the country come together. It doesn't matter what ages are. But, hey, I come to play. It's all, once I get on the court, I get my competitive level back, right? Hey, my mind is acting a lot faster than my body right now. But still, I'm very competitive. But it's about hanging out with a great group of friends and guys that you're playing with. And we make it this an annual thing, right? I think that's the best thing about the sport. It's a team sport. Not one individual can win, right? And you have to work together to be successful. And it's bringing those relationships and continuing to garner those going forward, which is great for the sport and for USA Volleyball and the national per se.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I always see the USA Volleyball Open Nationals as just like a big volleyball reunion. And, just for everyone loves volleyball. He's going to that event. So everyone's kind of like-minded and there for volleyball and there to have a good time. And who knows who you're going to run into. You might run into, old teammates, friends, coaches, might run into Olympians like yourself playing in the across the net from you. But just a big volleyball fun volleyball environment, just a big volleyball reunion.
A reunion with lots of ice and lots of drinks.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Maybe some icy hot in there too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, thank you so much for taking the time. Again, congratulations on being awarded the Friar Award and enjoy the celebrations in Dallas. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about or share before we let you go here?
No, I'm honored. I appreciate, when I look back on my career, my journey with USA Volleyball, whether it's a player or helping out, right? As a player, as a skinny 6'6 kid, I don't think I was the best athlete out there, but I always used my smarts, right? From that standpoint. So just to have the opportunity to dream and to play in the Olympics, and then also to get back and help out, it's just, I can't say enough about that. And I want to open this up to more people to reach their dreams or their opportunities. And I think that's what, being part of USA Volleyball and the different committees and the board is all about. And from all the regional people that help out to the actual, you know, USA Volleyball Corporation. It's great that we've seen the sport grow as strong as it is and getting stronger and continue to, you know, reach out and improve the grassroots level so more people have an opportunity to play. So just happy to be part of that and happy to be part of the journey and continue to do that and champion it going forward.
Thank you for sharing that, mentioning that. And yeah, thank you again for just sharing all your stories with us today, because they're a lot of fun. And we'll have to, before we let you go here, what size t-shirt do you wear? We'll have to get a podcast t-shirt out to you in Dallas.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, I'm an extra one.
Curtis, take note there. We'll have Curtis and Clarence bring you a t-shirt in Dallas for you.
Perfect. That'd be great. Well, I look forward to it. It's going to be a great celebration. It always is. There's a lot of great athletes and volunteers who win awards every year. I think it's a great, you know, like a great honor and a great chance to, you know, bring back those relationships and see, you know, the success of all the different athletes and volunteers that have occurred for USA Volleyball.
See you in Dallas. I know a lot of people on our end have been working hard to make this event a lot of fun, and it sounds like it's going to be a blast. I believe I heard just this morning that it was sold out, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
That's great, and the USA Volleyball Foundation's behind it more now, We'll definitely get out there. You know, anything with little or large amounts that all helps out to go to the goal to really continue to build this game. Thanks for attending, and thanks for this the great chat. Enjoyed it, and look forward to seeing everyone in Dallas.
Sounds good. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks.
I'll tell you what, if you drop a ball behind Karch's block, you'll never let that happen again. That's so funny. So many great stories, all throughout Scott's career, but really, really liked his stories involving Karch, both competing with Karch as teammates on the U.S. men's national team, but also kind of after the fact too, when Scott was competing overseas with his international club team, and then, you know, getting calls from Karch, who was just kind of getting into coaching at the time, just kind of picking Scott's brain and trying to learn how Scott's international coaches were kind of coaching the game of volleyball and learning then. So those were really cool little stories from Scott that I enjoyed, kind of the highlights of our conversation for me, at least.
Oh yeah. I mean, I unfortunately had to miss the interview, but listening in on it, just kind of touching base off of what you actually just mentioned, the way, you know, they practiced and trained overseas was a lot different back in his day. Not dating people or anything like that, but, you know, just back then it was just a lot more lax. It was just a whole, you know, systematic layout of, you know, practice plans and techniques, and all of those specifics were just so different than they are now. So that's really, I found that really cool that he kind of, you know, tie that and make that kind of connection to that. Cause, you know, nowadays it's all across all sports. It's just intense. And, you know, going internationally, it's a whole nother beast, a whole nother animal, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's definitely changed a lot, and
yes,
and still, I'm sure it's still different, country to country, club to club.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've had, you know, conversations with, first that comes to mind is, you know, TJ DeFalco's mm-hmm. Conversation with, you know, talking about the differences of the clubs that he's played for, including training with USA. But the funny moment was in that conversation relating to that was Scott talking about how in order to get his teammates to do conditioning and running and stuff is their coaches would have to get them to play soccer, just throw out a soccer ball out on the court or whatever. And then they would forget about, they'd forget about running. They would just be playing soccer. I thought that was funny, but
I know, gotta trick them. Got him.
Got him.
I think, it's also pretty good, since you brought up TJ DeFalco's episode. I wonder what are some things they would do to, you know, bond and stay together and, you know, celebrate some of those holidays overseas that you can't really Not that you can't celebrate, but that you don't really get the opportunity to celebrate because of your training schedule, because of just your overall schedule, you know, being in a whole other country. So, you know, just kind of making that comparison, wonder what that was like. You know, it was just a little food for thought. But
I'll have to ask him in Dallas.
I know. I know.
That is some of my favorite content around, you know, like Thanksgiving and Christmas from our national team athletes who are overseas. They'll get together with their USA teammates, you know, across countries. They'll kind of meet up somewhere, or even with their international teammates, they'll host a big dinner or something. And those are some of my favorite pieces of content that I see come around that time of year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, kind of like the whole Opens theme, and you hear that from a lot of the players. And I'm very excited to, for Scott to reunite with, you know, his volleyball friends, and, you know, hope he gets to enjoy celebrating with friends and family, with everything that he's done for the sport, volleyball in general, and just have a good time in Dallas. You know, I unfortunately won't be at the Hall of Fame banquet, but hopefully I can kind of get around to help out with the setup and, you know, kind of see him in passing. So, you know, we can have those, have a quick conversation about things there too, but it should be a lot of fun, and hopefully really enjoys it.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, congratulations again to Scott for getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, USA Volleyball Hall of Fame, and earning that Friar Award honor. That's an incredible achievement. And
it is.
Just again, thank you to Scott for all he's done for the sport of volleyball, and for sharing so many great stories with us on this episode. Hope he has fun in Dallas.
You know. Now, with that being said, time to move on. See what's up. The Grapevine with Stevine. Upcoming events.
Did you mention Volleypalooza at the top of this episode? Because
I could.
We got a long list of events, right?
I misspoke. Remember, I was like, volley, da, da, da. And then I said it again, but I did mention Volleypalooza. You ready? You got this?
Here we go. Speaking of Volleypalooza, the USA Volleyball Open National Championship is happening this week, May 26th through the 31st in Dallas, Texas. We have the East Coast Boys National Qualifier, May 27th through the 29th in Richmond, Virginia. The Carolina Region Crystal Coast Beach VB Open Regional Qualifier, May 27th in New Bern, North Carolina. The Gateway Region National Qualifier, May 27th through the 29th in Baldwin, Missouri. The Florida Region SSOVA Regional Qualifier, May 28th in St. Pete Beach, Florida. The North Texas MADSAN National Qualifier, June 1st through the 4th in Plano, Texas. The Rocky Mountain Region Regional Qualifier, June 2nd through the 3rd in Aurora, Colorado. And the Oklahoma Region Tulsa Beach Open Regional Qualifier, June 3rd in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Good luck to everyone competing in those events, and shout out to all USAB regions for setting up and hosting those events. And more details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org.
Rich, what? I can see Coach Carter.
Richmond.
There you go. All right. I was about to be very sad.
I think you cut out a little bit on my end, or maybe this is my feedback. Okay. I thought I heard it, but.
Oh, okay. Well, that's embarrassing. I'll say it again.
No, Coach Carter is a great movie.
Rich, what?
Great movie.
Rich, Witt. All right. Rich, just so you guys know what I said, in case I cut out. Also wanted to give you a little bit of a break there before you go into the pro side. Yeah,
that's right. Samuel Jackson.
Volleypalooza,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get, what's the one? There's another one, right, with Denzel.
Remember the Titans. Come on now.
No, well, yeah, but I thought it was a basketball movie. Or maybe I'm thinking of, maybe I am thinking of Coach Carter.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, great movies. Great sports movies.
Coach Carter. There's Hurricane Season with Forrest Whitaker. That's also a good one.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's a good one. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Whitaker, also Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out. All right. Enough. Here we go. On to the pro side of things. We have the Norseca U21 Women's Pan American Cup, May 23rd through the 28th in Mexico. The Norseca Beach Punta Cana event that's on May 29th through June 1st. The FIVB Women's Volleyball Nations League, week one, May 30th through June 4th in Antalya, Turkey. The Beach Pro Tour Elite 16, May 31st through June 4th in Ostrava, Czech Republic. The Norseca U21 Men's Pan American Cup, June 3rd through the 11th in Cuba. The FIVB Men's Volleyball Nations League, Week 1, June 6th through the 11th in Ottawa, Canada. I'm so excited that we're already at BNL. At the start of BNL here. This is going to be fun.
I thought you were going to say, I'm so excited that I got through this.
I am so excited that we are done with the events here.
Oh, man. Well done. But yeah, wow. Man, I feel like this summer is just going to fly by. I don't want it to, but I feel like it's going to fly by.
We're right at the start here. So
before you know, it's going to be nationals, going to be the other nationals, yeah. And then the other nationals.
Beach coming up. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, man. All right, deep breath. Remember, everyone, you can listen, rate, review, share this podcast with your friends, families, teammates, and all the above. It really helps us grow and just reach new listeners as a podcast community. And you can check out our video episodes on our website and on YouTube. Remember when YouTube first came out? What a time.
What would we do without YouTube now?
We would.
What did we do before YouTube? Can't remember.
I don't remember. I don't. But we thank you all for your continued support as we all think about what we used to do before YouTube came out. Do you know a club that should be featured or story you'd like to share on this podcast? You can email us at theusavshow@usav.org. Leave us feedback. Let us know how we're doing. And let us know of any future topics you want to hear about. It'll more than likely be featured. All you got to do is email us. Remember, our next episode will be on Wednesday, June 14th. And until then, thank you all for listening to the special episode, Hall of Fame episode 66, Execute Order 66 of the podcast. And remember, we're the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson, produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.